So I'm sitting in Jerry's this morning. I'm having breakfast. The waitress comes over to me. She's waving a newspaper. She says, "You see what those Canadians pulled off? Why can't we do something like that?" I said to her, you know what I said?
No, what?
Go f*** yourself.
Welcome to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, the podcast that just greenlit The Mortal Instruments Pretend It's a City of Bones. I'm your host, Taylor Cole, and I'm here with Neil Broadway Fennell.
Hey, everybody, break legs. No, really, I'm going to break your legs.
Lauren Huntress Hunter.
On the hunt for pop culture trivia and the high score.
And Jennifer Loves Everything Nielsen.
I've never met a quiz question I didn't like.
Hello, and thank you to everyone for being here for our season 4 premiere. We have made it to season 4, and we're going to kick off the new season today with the first elimination match of our Shermer division. But before we can do anything else, we have to introduce Score Master Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hi there, Taylor. Since we've been doing more music-based games lately, I decided to catch up on pop music. And so right now I'm about 2002, and I think these Nickelback guys are really onto something.
I like that in Dan's joke about not knowing anything about Nickelback and the fact that they're just a punchline now, he still made Nickelback the punchline. It's very, very in keeping. Here's some guy who's not a punchline. It's Production Master Dave.
What is this? A crossover episode?
That remains to be seen, Dave, and we won't know until we get things started, so let's kick it off with a round of My Champion. That's the game where each one of our three competitors today has chosen a champion from somewhere in the world of pop culture. We choose the battle that those champions undergo. Neil, who is your champion today?
William Miller from Almost Famous.
Lauren, who have you got?
I went with the Eternal Optimist, Ted Lasso.
And Jennifer, who is your champion?
My champion is the 1970s TV Wonder Woman, as played by Linda Carter.
All right, all three champions are locked in, so let's spin the scenario wheel. Today's My Champion scenario: who's going to write the juiciest tell-all memoir? All right, Neil, make the case for William Miller from Almost Famous.
This one almost seems unfair. I mean, to be perfectly honest, William Miller's life is already a memoir. So he's already had a movie made about a tell-all memoir by Cameron Crowe. But William himself, obviously, he's starting from a point where he's just still a little kid. He has to work his way up. But the thing is, he's such a good writer that Rolling Stone implicitly trusts him to get everything out there. He can, you know, even when the article's not where he wants it to be, he can talk them all into getting them to let him tell the story the way he wants it to be told. And then maybe William's life will become a movie eventually anyway as well.
An honest and unmerciful argument from Neil. Next up for Lauren, make the case for Ted Lasso writing a great tell-all memoir.
Well, Ted, as we know, is in this professional sports arena, so there has been a standard set in the past of excellent memoirs coming out of that field. In addition, Ted is known for his ability to tell a story. He's going to lay it down in a way that is exciting and compelling. And not only that, somehow makes you coming out of even the juiciest, grimiest stories feeling good about everybody involved. And that inherent goodness is going to get all those celebrities that he's dishing about to be willing to sign off because they know Ted's not going to make them look bad.
And Jennifer, how about 1970s Linda Carter version of Wonder Woman?
Well, I think Wonder Woman has a great advantage, of course. Having the lasso of truth means she's going to not only be able to spill her secrets, but she's going to be able to have access to other people's secrets, which sometimes is the best part of a memoir. I think also in her corner is that ability to be disguised by wearing just a pair of eyeglasses. She's probably going to be able to get access to people and situations that not everyone can. So I think that is going to make her memoir extra juicy.
I got to say, yeah. This is one of the most difficult My Champion scenarios I have ever had to judge. I am very much struggling to choose a winner, and I'm going to have to really make some tough decisions here. William Miller immediately jumps to mind because there is that sort of very memoir aspect to his life, and the movie Almost Famous is basically a tell-some memoir as opposed to a tell-all memoir. But that said, if the world of William Miller still has to come from the mind of Cameron Crowe, Cameron Crowe hasn't done anything interesting in a while. So I'm going to have to discount him because he is sort of over the hump of his career and what he could produce for William. As far as Wonder Woman goes, I do like the sort of elements of the secrecy that has to go with her in terms of gathering that information. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what makes a story the juiciest is the way in which it's told. And those storytelling elements from Ted Lasso, I think, are going to really just make a best-selling book, given how buzzy and beloved that show is right now. So today's My Champion winner is Ted Lasso and Lauren.
Woohoo! Yay, Lauren!
Lauren, this means you get a chance at the half point. Answer this question correctly, and you could have half a point more than either of your fellow competitors. Here is your half point question. Her memoir, titled No Lifeguard on Duty, The Accidental Life of the World's First Supermodel, was published too early to include her stint hosting a 2006 reality show about a modeling agency.
Would that be Cindy Crawford?
Not quite. That is going to be America's Next Top Model judge and also reality star Janice Dickinson, the answer there. You may have missed the half point, Lauren, but you still get to go first in round one, Half and Halftones 2, Half versus Halftones. TV shows and movies sometimes have crossovers, but they save the craziest ones for the pages of comic books. In this game, we'll be describing unexpected crossovers between pop culture characters, some fictional and some not, that took place in the pages of comic books. For instance, if I told you that the crossover started with a human soldier from the future hunting down a cybernetic Detroit cop before robots from the future came in to protect that cyborg, you'd know that it was a crossover between
Terminator and RoboCop.
If you needed a hint, I'd tell you a little bit more about each of the properties or people in that crossover. You'll win 10 points for an answer right away, but only 5 points after the hint. We'll kick off round one with Lauren. This crossover happened twice, in 1996 and 1998. The first one featured a meeting between two doctors named McCoy, and the second one featured a meeting between two guys who look a lot like Patrick Stewart.
So that would be Star Trek, so because that's Bones McCoy and Patrick Stewart. What are they going over with? What would be another Patrick Stewart property? I'll take the hint.
A 1966 TV show and a superhero comic from 1963.
Star Trek and X-Men?
Yes, with Hank McCoy being the X-Men McCoy there.
Duh.
Still 5 points for Lauren. Next up, over to Neil. A 2017 series in which Ursus and Zaius find a giant carcass washed ashore near the Statue of Liberty and set on a journey to a mysterious island filled with giant creatures.
The first part has got to be Planet of the Apes. A mysterious island full of giant creatures. I don't know that the years of release are going to help me at all, so I'm just going to guess. I'm going to say Planet of the Apes and Wonder Woman.
The other half was still
wait. Give him the hint. See if he would have got it. Because he's big man with the years, but I think the years might have helped him.
A 1933 movie and a 1968 movie.
1933. Oh, King Kong? Sorry, that's edit that out.
Yes, staying on the ape thing, that is King Kong and Planet of the Apes.
Got it. Should have asked for that.
For Jennifer, a 1995 series has an alien superhero discovering a city that escaped the death of his home planet, but it's infested by vicious, parasitic creatures. Plus, the lack of a yellow sun makes him vulnerable.
Well, the first part sounds like Green Lantern. Parasitic creatures makes me think of Alien, but I think I'll take the hint.
A comic character from 1939 and a 1979 movie.
Okay. So I'm going to guess maybe Superman and Green Lantern.
You had so much of it there. That is Superman versus aliens. The parasitic creatures are indeed the xenomorphs. For Lauren. In this 2019 series, a young teen sees a cute girl playing tabletop role-playing game and asks his grandpa, a veteran gamer, to teach him how to play. Things quickly escalate into a life or death struggle in an alternate universe, as they often do when grandpa gets involved.
So that's Rick and Morty. The grandpa and the girl wearing, would that be Stranger Things? Rick and Morty and Stranger Things? Oh.
No, but it's something that the Stranger Things kids like. That is Dungeons and Dragons crossing over with Rick and Morty.
Got it.
For Neil, in this 2020 series, Queen Chrysalis casts a spell looking for more changelings, but she accidentally interferes with a malfunctioning Cybertronian space bridge, transporting shape-shifting aliens into Equestria.
None of those words make any sense to me whatsoever. I knew it. I said to people, I was like, I'll be great unless they do comics. Okay, could I hear it one more time?
In this 2020 series, Queen Chrysalis casts a spell looking for more changelings, but she accidentally interferes with a malfunctioning Cybertronian space bridge, transporting shape-shifting aliens into Equestria.
Shape-shifting aliens into Equestria. The only thing I know about a space bridge that I can think of might be Thor. And then Queen Chrysalis and changelings. I'm going to say, I'll take the hint. Why not?
A franchise that started with a 1984 toy line and a franchise that started with a 1981 toy line.
All right. So I'm going to Transformers. The years were 1981 and 1984.
Yes.
Toy lines. Cybertronian. That's the Transformers. I get it. Queen Chrysalis and the Changelings. Oh, man. Say Transformers and My Little Pony. What?
Hey. Yeah, Equestria might lead you towards ponies there. 5 points for Neil.
That was great, Neil.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
For Jennifer. Stripped of her memory and her most recognizable weapons, a superheroic princess from a mysterious island is transported to Cimmeria, where her enemies think a certain barbarian might be the only warrior skillful enough to defeat her.
I'm already thinking the first part might be Wonder Woman, who's a favorite of mine. I'll go ahead and take the hint for the second part.
A comic book character from 1941 and a pulp character who first appeared in 1932.
Okay, so maybe Conan the Barbarian and Wonder Woman?
Absolutely. Back to Lauren. Picture, if you will, in your own world, you're a fearsome crime fighter who stalks the night. But in this 2016 series, you wake up today in another world where the crime fighter is just a character you play in a radio show that bears his name. You are no longer a man with a mission, just a 22-year-old prodigy with an impressive voice and a lot of questions.
I'll take the hint.
A 1959 TV show and a pulp character from 1930.
Oh, gosh. Let's go with pulp character, maybe Dick Tracy. What was the other part of it?
A 1959 TV show.
I gotta pass. I've got nothing.
That's going to be a mashup comic between The Twilight Zone and The Shadow, with the picture, if you will, being a nod to The Twilight Zone.
Got it. Yep.
For Neil. In this 2015 one-shot, Mr. Lodge and Sabrina are killed when sea creatures start falling from the sky, but the rest of the gang manages to set off a bomb powerful enough to dispel the storm.
Oh boy, there are things that are familiar in that. Mr. Lodge and Sabrina. Sea creatures falling from the sky reminds me of Watchmen. That's the only thing I can think of. But Mr. Lodge and Sabrina, I'll take the hint.
A comic character from 1941 and a TV movie series that started in 2013.
Oh, so maybe I'm wrong about everything.
We've all felt that way sometimes, Neil.
I don't know. I'll say Dick Tracy and the Langoliers.
Funny enough, that was the name of my band in high school. Yeah. No, that comic is Archie versus Sharknado.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
That's the Lodge. That's Lodge. Okay, I got it.
Next up to Jennifer. In this 1995 crossover, a low-rent jazz-playing superhero pisses off a magic user and is sent to an alternate universe where he fights and then teams up with an animalistic X-Man to escape a murderous carnival.
Okay. The first part I'm not really sure of, but the second part, if I go over my X-Men, the most animalistic one was the guy that was blue but was not Wolverine. So I think I am going to take the hint.
A mostly forgotten comic book character introduced in 1994 who had a terrible TV show starting in 1997, and a rather more popular comic hero who first appeared in 1974.
Okay. That didn't help as much as I hoped it would. So I think I need to pass.
That low-rent hero is Nightman, teaming up in that with Wolverine. And that'll kick us right into our first score break from Scoremaster Dan.
You know, Taylor, the beauty of these first score breaks normally is that we get to curse somebody. Whoever's in the lead, we know they're starting to start failing right after this first score break. However, at this point, there's no one in the lead because everyone is tied with 5 points.
I really wish I could tell my teachers from elementary school that I should have been reading more comic books.
Jennifer, amazing. Just let me tell you, you should not have been reading Nightmare comic books at any point. Really, I read them all. It's not worth it.
All right, next up, back to Lauren. After being defeated once again by his feline enemies, this 2016 series has an evil mummy-like creature seeking out a magic sword from Eternia.
So the mummy-like feature afraid of cats makes me think of Imhotep from the mummy, but he just is a mummy. So I don't know if mummy-like is a... I'll take the hint.
A franchise that started with a 1981 toy line and a franchise that started with a 1985 cartoon.
Sword from Eternia kind of made me think He-Man. I don't know. Let's go He-Man and the Mummy. Yeah.
That is He-Man and Thundercats, with the feline elements in the clue pointing to Thundercats. Ho. All right, for Neil, in this 1996 crossover, a literal jungle lord has to travel to the center of the earth, where trophy-hunting aliens are seeking out the world's greatest warriors.
So a jungle lord traveling to the center of the earth and searching for the world's greatest warriors. Trophy-hunting aliens, I think, is Predator, and jungle lord... let me get the... I'm just going to go for it. Tarzan and Predator.
Ooh. A full 10-point answer for Neil.
Nice job.
Nice, nice, nice.
Though that clue is like almost the plot of Godzilla versus Kong from this year. Almost.
Well, see, the difference is King Kong is not actually a king, where Tarzan is literally a lord.
Okay. Oh, that kind of lord. Got it. All right, for Jennifer, a 2000 crossover in which a murder clown augments his power and chaotic potential with a mystical artifact linked to Loki that he steals from a museum.
So the murderous clown is probably it. I'm not too good on Loki artifacts, so I will ask for the hint.
A comic book villain from 1940 and a 1991 comic that's better known for a 1994 film.
Okay. That wouldn't be it because he wasn't around in 1940. So a murderous clown from 1940 might be... Actually, I'm going to have to pass again.
That's The Joker versus The Mask. That comic series adapted into the Jim Carrey movie, The Mask. For Lauren... In this 2018 crossover comic, a sentient street waylays a team of teen detectives and their dog to help a weird superhero team that includes Crazy Jane, Robot Man, and Elastigirl. Let's hope that the kids reading it don't seek out the superhero group's TV show.
The sentient street is tripping me up a little bit, but I think that the team of teens and their dog has got to be Scooby-Doo. And then Crazy Jane and Elastigirl. Well, Elastigirl is making me think of The Incredibles, but I don't think any kids would have problems watching that one. So I'm going to go with that's probably not what it's referring to. I'll take the hint.
A franchise that started with a 1969 TV show and a superhero team that premiered in 1963.
Let's do Scooby-Doo and Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, that superhero team is Doom Patrol, but you were right about the Scooby-Doo part. For Neil, in this 1993 crossover, a neurotic web-slinger helps a chihuahua and a cat take on the parodic Powdered Toast Man.
A neurotic web-slinger should be Spider-Man, and the Powdered Toast Man is definitely Ren and Stimpy. I'm just going to say Spider-Man and Ren and Stimpy.
Another 10 points for Neil.
Ooh, Neil.
Hit my wheelhouse. Thank you. Ren and Stimpy, Children of the 90s, unite.
And closing out with Jennifer. A 2017 series has two felines, one from a comic strip and one from online means, coming into conflict despite being basically the same character.
Okay. So if I think about cats in comic strips, I first think of Felix the Cat. And then online memes, I think of Grumpy Cat. So knowing how well Neil's been doing, I'm just going to go for Felix the Cat and Grumpy Cat.
Neil?
Is it Garfield and Grumpy Cat?
Oh.
Garfield and Grumpy Cat. And that'll finish out round one. Next up, the scores from Dan and onward into round two.
After one round of play, it's time for the Chet Hanks score break. Chet Hank. Okay, guys, you know what? There's no way I'm reading this on mic. I don't care how much he's paying us or who his father is. This is absolutely not happening. All right, so after one round of play, Neil is in the lead with 25 points. Lauren and Jennifer are tied with 5, but that means they'll get to go first in round two.
Thank you, Dan. That also means that Lauren and Jennifer are going to get to work together on The Threequalizer. Lauren, Jennifer, I'm going to ask you a question that has 3 possible correct answers. You guys can confer what you're thinking and then give 3 answers to try to match as many of the correct ones as you can. 10 points to split between you for each correct answer you get. Your Threequalizer question is... 2020 was unusual for recent years in that the BAFTA Award for Best Picture and the Academy Award for Best Picture went to the same movie. It happened in 2010 for The King's Speech, but only 3 times between then and Nomadland. Which 3 movies won both awards during that period of time?
BAFTAs and Oscars are not a big area for me.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of British movies that won the Oscar is kind of where I'm imagining to start.
The Favourite didn't win the Oscar. I don't think it was Moonlight. Maybe Shape of Water? Do you think Del Toro?
That sounds like a possibility.
I know it's not Green Book. We'll go with that. Green Book did not win the BAFTA. I'm going to be definitive with that. So yeah, I'll guess Shape of Water, and then I got nothing else. Let's say the Favorite, maybe?
Yeah, I think The Favorite actually is a good guess.
Roma? Did Roma win the Oscar? I can't even remember.
I think it did, but I don't know if it would have won the BAFTA. But those are 3 movies from the last 10 years, and you're farther along than me. So for the Threequalizer Challenge, we're guessing The Shape of Water, Roma, and The Favorite.
Argo, f*** yourself.
Oh, Argo.
Argo is one of them. The other 2 are The Artist from 2011 and 12 Years a Slave from 2013 from British director Steve McQueen.
Okay.
So no Threequalizer points, but still plenty of game left to play. But before we get to round 2, let's get to know our players a little bit better by learning about their hot takes, stories, and ideas from the world of pop culture. Neil, if you could greenlight the possibility of a restaurant based on any pop culture property that hasn't already been turned into a restaurant, what would you like to see happen?
Well, if this doesn't exist, then it's already a travesty. One of my favorite shows of all time is the wonderful Parks and Recreation. And I know that it films in Los Angeles, but there should be an ode to JJ's Diner somewhere to preserve that Pawnee, Indiana heritage that should live on there in Indiana somewhere.
Absolutely. The menu is already there. They've said half of it just in dialogue from the show. It's a slam dunk.
Waffles and whipped cream.
And Lauren, for you, what is your best experience with watching a movie on a plane? It's a weird way to watch a movie.
It is. And I used to travel quite a bit for work, which I'm not great at. I'm a bit of an anxious person. So I may have taken something to help me zone out a little bit in an edible form and decided to fire up Game Night. Hadn't seen it yet. And started laughing right from the beginning. There was a little lady next to me, had to be at least 85, stops me and says, "Can you make my TV do what yours is doing?" And I said, "Oh, do you need me to help you find a movie?" And she said, "No, you're laughing. I want mine to do what yours is doing." So I started the movie about 10 minutes behind me. And as I'm watching, she's watching me react and then eagerly turning back to her screen. And then every time it happened for her, she would pat me on the arm and point. And I would say, yes, I remember. It happened for me 10 minutes ago. And it was the most pure, delightful bonding experience of watching a movie I've ever had.
Can I ask, how did she react to the airplane engine scene near the end of the movie?
Very much Kevin McAllister, hands to the face, like full on Home Alone.
Amazing. Ooh. Thank you, Lauren. And Jennifer, if you could make a movie that's an adaptation of a work of literature, but have it entirely star talking dogs, what work of literature would you most like to see in dog form?
Well, I would go back to a classic, Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. I just think that dogs kind of lend themselves to any rags to riches movie about social hierarchy and things like that. And I feel like in my lifetime, I've met so many dogs that really have lived out Mrs. Havisham's life. They kind of look at you and you know they're wanting to tell you, you know, I really was something when I was young. You can't see it now, but boy, if you could have seen me then. So I feel like that would be a really good fit.
Oh,
wonderful. We're going to take that element of British literature and stilted adaptation into round two, entitled Before and BAFTA. There's no doubt that the films that win the BAFTA award for best film are good, but sometimes they're a little too high-minded for us. So we've decided to make them a little more palatable by mashing them up with a different movie or TV show. In this game, I'll give you a description of a mashed-up movie consisting of a movie or TV show and a BAFTA Best Film winner from a specified year. You have to name the mashup title before and after style. So, if I told you that this BAFTA winner was from 2010, and it was about a young prince returning to the Pride Lands to reclaim the crown and having to overcome his biggest fear, public speaking, you'd know that the title was...
The Lion King's Speech.
Yes, The Lion King Speech from The Lion King and the 2010 BAFTA Best Film winner, The King's Speech. That answer would get you 30 points. If you need some help, I can tell you who would star in the mashup, but then a correct answer is only worth 20. If you still can't get it, I'll tell you the name of the BAFTA-winning film, but after that, a correct answer is only worth 10. As always, we'll be dropping some articles to make a better fit if necessary. Let's kick off round two with Jennifer. Your BAFTA-winning film is from 1966. An elephant's large ears lead him to discover a tiny civilization of middle-aged professors sniping at each other.
Okay, so I'm thinking that the film might be The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, and that the movie or TV show might be Dumbo, but I'm not sure how to combine them yet, so I will ask for the first hint.
This movie would star Jim Carrey and Elizabeth Taylor.
Jim Carrey and Elizabeth Taylor. That would be a really great combination. I think I might have to... Well, 1966 is too late for National Velvet because I'm thinking about Elizabeth Taylor. So I might go ahead with the last hint, please.
The second half of the answer is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Okay. So I think it's going to be Horton Hears a Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
For 10 points, correct. Next up for Lauren, your BAFTA-winning half comes from 1995. A little boy who can see dead people might be the only hope for the Dashwood sisters when their rich father dies, leaving them penniless.
The Sixth Sense and Sensibility.
Quick 30 points for Lauren. Next up to Neil, your BAFTA winner comes from 1972. When you step into this one special taxi, you could win a lot of money, but watch out for the doomed Weimar-era decadence that inevitably follows.
I think that would be a blast. That's Cash Cabaret.
That sounds like a fun time.
Money, money, money. Money, money, money.
Oh my God, that's perfect. All right, back to Jennifer. Your BAFTA-winning film comes from 1997. A hodgepodge of Victorian sci-fi and horror characters are left with only one way to make ends meet, an amateur striptease.
Okay. Victorian and sci-fi and horror, I'm just going to put to the side. because I remember the one about the miners in Britain that had to put on like a striptease show in order because they were all getting laid off. Can't remember the name of that movie right now, though, of course. So I think I'll go ahead for the first hint.
This mashup would star Eva Green and Tom Wilkinson.
Okay. Victorian sci-fi and horror with Eva Green sounds like Miss Peregrine's School for Exceptional Children. It's a title kind of like that. So I'm going to, but I can't remember the name of the other movie, so I'm going to go ahead and go for the second hint.
The BAFTA winning half is The Full Monty.
Okay. The Full Monty. I'm going to pass.
Lauren knows this one.
Penny Dreadful Monty.
Yes, Penny Dreadful, the Showtime series with Eva Green. Next up for Lauren, your BAFTA winner comes from 2014. A slovenly underachieving son and an accountant have to save the family business in this tender portrait of growing up in America shot over the course of 12 years.
Okay, so shot over the course of 12 years, that sounds like Boyhood. And so then it's a slovenly underachiever and an accountant. Let's go for the first hint.
This movie would star Chris Farley and Patricia Arquette.
So would that be Tommy Boyhood?
For 20 points, Tommy Boyhood. Next up to Neil, your BAFTA winner comes from 1973. Alien Invasions, Area 51, egregious product placement from Coca-Cola. None of these distractions are going to stop Ferran from finishing his movie in a classic Truffaut film.
Oh, I don't know Truffaut. Area 51, the beginning part sounds like Independence Day. Can I get the first hint, please?
Starring Will Smith and Jacqueline Bisset.
Let's go straight for that second hint, please, and I think I'll put it together.
The BAFTA winner is Day for Night.
Independence Day for Night.
For 10 points, you got it.
Folks, everyone at home really missed out when they couldn't see Neil's face when we said classic Truffaut film. Just
over to Jennifer. Your BAFTA winner comes from 1959.
Okay.
He seems like a nice bear until you run into him during a chariot race.
So a chariot race just makes me think of Spartacus or the Ten Commandments. And 1959, I'm thinking the Ten Commandments. But I can't connect it with a bear yet, so I am going to go for the first hint.
Starring Clint Howard and Charlton Heston.
Okay, so I'm feeling better about the Ten Commandments. Clint Howard. I think that's Ron Howard's brother, and I am remembering him with a bear, but I am going to go for the second hint.
The BAFTA winner is Ben-Hur.
Okay, that's the one with the chariot race. So there was, I think, an old movie or a TV show with a bear named Ben. Can't remember the name of that TV show, but I'm just going to try to make one up. So let's go with Friendly Ben-Hur.
Oh, you're so close.
Am I close?
Answer there, Gentle Ben-Hur. Back over to Lauren. Your BAFTA winner comes from 1986. A home invasion leads a woman and her child to shelter in a secure part of their house, but they didn't expect to run into her fling from Florence in there.
Panic Room with a View?
30 points for Lauren.
That was brilliant, Lauren.
Nice.
Over to Neil. Your BAFTA winner comes from 1971. A third-string quarterback gets one last chance and surprises everyone. But will his polyamorous relationships and their complications put a damper on his newfound success?
I have a feeling I'll be able to get the first movie by the actor, and then we'll suss out the 71 movie. Yeah, I'll get the first hint, please.
Starring Al Pacino and Peter Finch.
Okay, so Al Pacino, that's Any Given Sunday, Another Day. Well, again, I've got the first one, so I'm going to take the 10 points and get the last clue.
That BAFTA winner is Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Any given Sunday Bloody Sunday, Bloody Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
For 10 points, and that'll take us into our next score update from Scoremaster Dan.
At this point, Jennifer still is behind with 15 points, Neil has 75, and Lauren has jumped in the lead. She has 85 points, but we still have half of round two to go.
Next up is for Jennifer. Your BAFTA winner comes from 1969. A comedy writer struggles with heroin addiction and eventually winds up turning tricks in New York.
So far, I'm not getting anything out of that, so I'm going to go for the first hint.
Starring Ben Stiller and Dustin Hoffman.
Okay, Ben Stiller and Dustin Hoffman. So I know Ben Stiller was in Permanent Midnight. He's the writer. And then there's Midnight Cowboy, so I'm going to say Permanent Midnight Cowboy.
20 points for Jennifer. Over to Lauren. Your BAFTA winner comes from 1975. Therapy and sexual tension among middle-aged friends threaten to derail a widow's quest to make a name for herself as a singer.
Middle-aged, quest to be a singer, therapy. Yeah, that's not ringing any strong bells. Let's go for the first hint.
Starring Natalie Wood and Ellen Burstyn.
I want to say Bob, Terrell, Ted, and Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice. Why can't I think of Alice? I need the last hint.
The BAFTA winner is Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
So that's Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Yes. And to anyone at home who's like, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore actually came out in 1974. That is true for the United States, but it was released later in the UK, which is why it competed at the 1975 BAFTAs, but the 1974 Oscars.
Yeah.
Next up for Neil, your BAFTA winner comes from 1990. Everybody's trying to get a piece of a top high school football player, but as long as he can remember, he always wanted to be a gangster.
He always wanted to be a gangster. I'm pretty sure that's Goodfellas, which I believe did not win the Oscar, which is a tragic shame. Top high school football player isn't ringing any bells, so I'll get the hint.
Starring Anthony Michael Hall and Robert De Niro.
Oh, Anthony Michael Hall. Just going to go for it. I'm not even sure if this is a movie. Johnny B. Goodfellas? Okay.
Absolutely, for 20 points. One more before and BAFTA clue for each player, starting with Jennifer. Your BAFTA winner comes from 2019. Their proximity to Gray Sloan Memorial means that these firefighters thought they'd seen it all. But nothing prepared them for the single-take horrors of World War One.
Single-take horrors of World War One. I saw that movie, and it's not coming to mind right now, so I'm going to work on the other part. I know Gray Sloan is going to be Gray's Anatomy. And so I just have to remember the name of that movie. So I will take the first hint.
Starring Jaina Lee Ortiz and Colin Firth.
Okay, maybe I'm not going in the right direction then. So I'm thinking that it's maybe a combination of 911 and 1914. So I'm going to try 9-1-1914.
Not quite. The firefighter show that's a spinoff of Grey's Anatomy is Station 19, mashed up here to create Station 1917, is that Sam Mendes movie.
Ah, thank you.
And for Lauren, your BAFTA winner is from 1999. An African prince travels to the U.S. to find a bride, but gets sidetracked by his creepy infatuation with his daughter's best friend.
Coming to American Beauty.
Lightning quick 30 points from Lauren. Over to Neil, your BAFTA winner is from 1996. A buffoonish British spy is shot down and badly burned towards the end of World War II.
Badly burned World War II, that's The English Patient, I believe. Let me get the first hint.
Starring Rowan Atkinson and Juliette Binoche.
Okay, yeah. So it's, I don't remember what his first name is in that English movie. It's like Johnny or Jimmy or Swimmy Samsonite. I was way off. We're going to go with Johnny English Patient. Oh, phew. Okay.
Good pull. 20 points. That'll close out round two. Up next, one more score update from Dan and onward to the final round. Before the final round of play, it's time for the home version. Listeners, see if you can correctly guess the answer to Dan's pop culture riddle by the time next week's episode drops. If so, you get a chance to name a score break here on the show. Dan?
From my vulture, I'll often gloat and shine the buttons on my blue coat. Years later, I'm back with some musical flair and apparently rid of that darn bear.
Think you know it? Find the page for this episode at usaquizshow.com or check the link in your show notes and share your answer. Thanks for the riddle, Dan. How about the score update?
Going round three, it's time for the Bagel Bites Jingle score break. The Bagel Bites Jingle. If the evening and supper time are distinct from one another, when the heck are these people eating supper? Right now, Lauren is in lead with 125 points. Neil is close behind with 115. Jennifer's in third place with 35, but that means she'll get to go first in round three.
All right, Jennifer, anything can still happen in the lightning round. Players have their choice of categories and are given 90 seconds to answer as many questions in that category as possible. Get 10 points for each correct answer you can provide. Today's categories are Burn, Baby, Burn, Blood in the Water, Fit for a King, and Scary Stories About Scary Stories. Now, those topic names might be a little bit mysterious, so pick the thing that you're going to do best on, or strategically keep something away from one of your fellow players. Jennifer, in third place, you get first pick. Which of the four categories would you like? Once again, they are Burn, Baby, Burn, Blood in the Water, Fit for a King, and Scary Stories About Scary Stories.
I'll go for Fit for a King.
Any guesses as to what's going on in this category?
I'm thinking it might be about tailoring.
I love that idea, but it's the second half that we're keying off here, in that the word king or kings is going to show up in each correct answer.
Okay.
90 seconds on the clock. The timer starts when I finish reading the first question. Jennifer, are you ready?
Yes.
This Kevin James sitcom ran for 9 seasons on CBS.
King of Queens.
She won an Oscar for If Beale Street Could Talk.
Regina King.
Julie Taymor directed this blockbuster musical that premiered on Broadway in 1997.
The Lion King.
Arizona band The Refreshments provide the theme for this long-running Fox animated sitcom.
Pass.
He directed the 1986 flop Maximum Overdrive.
Stephen King.
Special effects guru Ray Harryhausen said that this 1933 classic changed his life.
King Kong.
This Sierra graphic adventure video game series has had 10 installments since 1980.
Pass.
This 2003 fantasy film won 11 Oscars, including Best Picture.
Pass.
This musical is based on the memoirs of Anna Leonowens.
The King and I.
Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams star in this 1991 Terry Gilliam movie.
Oh, pass.
His talk show ran on CNN from 1985 until 2010.
Larry King.
This band had a number one hit in 2009 with Use Somebody.
Pass.
She wrote the number one hit Will You Love Me Tomorrow at the age of 17.
Goodness. Pass.
Judd Apatow and Pete Davidson wrote this 2020 movie set in New York's smallest borough.
King of Brooklyn?
King of Staten Island would have been the answer there. All right, Dan, let's hear the Jennifer report.
Absolutely. And Jennifer, I want to say I'm with you. I don't think we should count Staten Island as a borough either. So let's just kick it out and call it a day. All right. Arizona band The Refreshments, happens to be my favorite band, provides the theme for King of the Hill on Fox. The Sierra graphic adventure video game series that keeps on coming out with games is King's Quest. The 2003 film that won 11 Oscars is Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. The Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams movie is The Fisher King. The band that had a number one hit with You Somebody is the Kings of Leon. And the writer of the number one hit, Will You Love Me Tomorrow, was Carole King. Still, Jennifer actually had a very good round. She got 7 correct answers. She finishes up with 105 points. Unfortunately, not enough to put her into first place. Neil is up next. He'll have to get just one question to tie Lauren for the lead and 2 to move into first himself.
All right. Neil, you are up next. Your remaining category choices are Burn, Baby, Burn, Blood in the Water, and Scary Stories About Scary Stories.
I have no idea. I think I know what the first one's about, and so I'm going to avoid it. Let's go with Blood in the Water to find out.
Got any guesses?
I don't know. Maybe it's about sharks in movies or Jaws of the year Jaws came out. I don't know.
Sharks in movies and TV and just general pop culture sharks is exactly right for this category. We're talking about sharks from everywhere in the world of pop culture.
All right.
90 seconds on the clock. Neil, are you ready?
Ready.
Shark Week is an annual programming block on this channel.
The Discovery Channel.
This character uses shark repellent spray in a 1966 movie extension of a TV series.
Batman.
This Finding Nemo shark character shares a name with the mechanical shark used on the set of Jaws.
Bruce.
Pink Fong's version of this song has been viewed over 7 billion times on YouTube.
Baby Shark.
This Bobby Darin hit opens with the line, "Oh, the shark babe has such teeth, dear."
Beyond the Sea.
Mac the Knife. This ABC reality series has featured companies Coffee Meets Bagel and Scrub Daddy.
Shark Tank.
Blake Lively survives a shark attack in this 2016 thriller.
Pass.
Mandy Moore is trapped in a shark cage this many meters down.
Pass.
Ron Funches voices King Shark on this DC Comics animated series.
Pass.
David Hayter voices King Shark on this DC Comics live action series.
Suicide Squad.
The Flash. This star of Deep Blue Sea declares his hat is like a shark's fin in the end credits song.
Pass.
This Beverly Hills 90210 star appears in all 6 Sharknado movies.
Pass.
This emo band's Irresistible has the line, "Too many sharks, not enough blood in the waves."
Pass.
This Jaws installment had the famous tagline, "This time it's personal."
Jaws 3?
Jaws 4, The Revenge, This time it's personal.
Ugh.
All right, Dan, let's get the Neil report.
All right, so Neil apparently didn't see a bunch of movies where young women are threatened by sharks, so the Blake Lively one is The Shallows, and the Mandy Moore one is 47 Meters Down. Ray Funches voices King Shark on the Harley Quinn animated series, and it's LL Cool J who does like an end credits rap on Deep Blue Sea. It's not good. End credits. Come on, guys. It's not 1996. We can do better.
Deepest, bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin. It's an all-time classic. I don't know what Dan's talking about.
Ian Ziering appears in all 6 of the Sharknado movies.
Ian Ziering. I'm sorry. I cannot stand for Ian Ziering. I'm being very pedantic today.
Ian Ziering appears in all 6 of the Sharknado movies. I've actually seen all of them. And
a Sharknado, just so you know.
Ian Ziering appears in all 6 of the Sharknado movies, and the emo band that has the line about sharks is Fallout Boy. Neil had 5 correct questions. That gives him a total of 165 points and moves him in the lead. Lauren's going to need to get 4 questions correct in order to force a tie, and 5 in order to move back into first.
Okay, Lauren, your final 2 category choices are Burn, Baby, Burn, and Scary Stories About Scary Stories.
You know what? Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was my all-time favorite as a kid, so let's go the Scary Stories route.
Not too far off. In this case, though, half of those stories are the stories of a house, so it's all going to be questions about pop culture haunted houses.
Oh, boy. Okay, here we go.
90 seconds on the clock. Lauren, are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
This 2018 Netflix adaptation veered off wildly from the Shirley Jackson novel it's based on.
The Haunting of Hill House.
In the 2015 Poltergeist remake, Sam Rockwell replaced him as the dad.
Oh, pass.
Despite the anxieties of the second Mrs. De Winter, the house in this movie isn't actually haunted.
Rebecca.
This almost famous actress starred alongside Jenna Rollins in 2005's The Skeleton Key.
Kate Hudson.
The 1995 movie based on this property revealed that the title character died of pneumonia.
Pass.
The more than a dozen ghosts in this 1960 schlock classic included a lion tamer and a lion.
13 Ghosts?
1973's The Legend of Hell House was based on a novel by this I Am Legend author.
Pass.
Evil fridges and pianos that bite are in this trippy 1977 Japanese cult horror flick.
Pass, but I want to see it.
He directed 1988's Beetlejuice.
Tim Burton.
The Innocents and The Turning are among works based on this author's The Turn of the Screw.
Pass.
Nicole Kidman is a frazzled mother with two light-sensitive kids in this 2001 movie.
The Others.
This 1959 Vincent Price movie originally featured a plastic skeleton flown over the audience's head.
Pass.
This United States of Terra actress makes creepy model houses in 2018's Hereditary.
Toni Collette.
Correct, but after the buzzer. All right, Dan, let's hear the Lauren report.
All right. It was Craig T. Nelson who was the dad in the original Poltergeist movie. In the 1995 movie, we found out that it was Casper the Friendly Ghost who died of pneumonia and actually was a child who died, which I don't know why you put that in the movie. Richard Matheson wrote The Legend of Hell House and I Am Legend. The trippy 1977 Japanese cult horror flick that you really should seek out is Houseu, released in the United States as House. Henry James is the author of The Turn of the Screw, which has been much adapted, and the 1959 schlock Vincent Price movie with a plastic skeleton that got flown over the audience's head because that was supposed to scare you was The House on Haunted Hill. Remember, I said that Lauren needed to get 5 questions to correct to move into first. Jennifer wound up with 105 points. Neil got 165 points. Lauren got 6 questions correct. That means you want 185 points. Our winner is Lauren.
Lauren, thanks, Lauren. Congratulations.
Nice job. Good job.
Congratulations to Lauren. But that does mean it is time to say goodbye to Neil and Jennifer. Guys, fantastic way to kick off the season. Thank you. Thank you again for coming to play with us. But before we go, is there anything you'd like our listeners to know about? Anything to plug? Jennifer?
Well, I don't produce anything online, but my father, I'll give him a nod. He actually produces a wonderful website called todayinconservation.com, where each day you can read a very detailed article about what happened in conservation history that day.
Fantastic. And Neil, anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, just launching a podcast with my two best friends from high school. We have started doing Zoom calls over the pandemic and started drafting top fives of random things. And so we've actually recorded quite a few. We're going to put it out. It's called Three Guys Top Fives, and you can find that online on Twitter. I make movies. You can find me at neil-fennell.com. And my filmmaking troupe is called Off Hollywood Productions. We have quite a few things on there. You can find us on YouTube.
Great. But the biggest congratulations of all today are going to Lauren. Lauren, you're coming back for the Shermer Division Finals. In the meantime, is there anything in particular you want to sort of bone up or study up on so we get your best game?
Ooh, comic books. I thought I was better, but that first round was a killer.
Well, it didn't hurt you too much in the long run. And anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, actually, my best friend and I do a Babysitter's Club podcast called Generation BSC. We are rereading our way through the books and just having a lot of fun talking about the books and the show and what they meant to us then. And spoiler alert, what doesn't hold up so well in 2021?
Fantastic. And listeners, you can also follow Lauren as the bathtub emoji on our season 4 bracket. Well, that'll wrap it up for this week. Be sure to join us next time for the first match in the Calistola Division. I've been your host, Taylor Cole, and on behalf of Scoremaster Dan and Production Master Dave, thanks for listening to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. Hey, everybody. Remember Dan's riddle from before the lightning round? If you know that answer, check the link in your show notes or find the page for this episode on our website, usaquizshow.com. While you're there, check out the old season brackets, past episodes, and maybe apply to be a contestant on the show in the future.
Social media is probably going to destroy all of our society, but that's all right, because we can still get some joy out of it, and the joy is going to come when you follow us. We're on Instagram and Twitter. We're at USA Quiz Show on both.
The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show is brought to you by BAFTA Scoremaster Dan Cassino and Cole Crossover Project contributors, host Taylor Cole and production master David Teagle.
Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Oh, so maybe I'm wrong about everything.
We've all felt that way sometimes, Neil.